Buckhart rode ahead on the gelding frost. He led them straight towards the cliff that blocked off the head of the valley, like a mighty fortress. Jim pushed his hat to the back of his head and gazed up at the wall of rock. "There's no way through," he shook his head. High above them, the vultures sailed across the rock face on wide wings, coming in to land on the ledges beside their bulky nests of sticks and twigs. "Buckhart will find the way," Louisa contradicted him. Already she had complete confidence and trust in the little bushman. They shared not a single word of common language, but in the evenings at the campfire the two often sat close together, communicating with hand signs and facial expressions, laughing at jokes that they both seemed to understand perfectly. Jim wondered how he could be jealous of Buckhart, but Louisa was not as at ease with him as she was with the bushman. They climbed on upwards, straight towards the solid wall of rock. Louisa had dropped back to ride with Zama, who was bringing up the two spare horses at the rear of the column. Zama had been her protector and constant companion during all the long, hard days of the flight from Kayser, while Jim had been occupied with guarding the back trail and keeping the pursuit at bay. They had developed a rapport, too. Zama was teaching her the language of the forests, and as she had an ear for the language, she was learning swiftly. Jim had come to realize that Louisa possessed some quality that drew others to her. He tried to fathom what it was. He cast his mind back to their first encounter on the deck of the convict ship. For him, the attraction had been immediate and compelling. He tried to put it into words. Is it that she emanates a feeling of compassion and goodness? He was not sure. It seemed that she hid only from him behind the defensive armor he called her hedgehog prickles. To others she was open and friendly. It was confusing, and at times he resented it. He wanted her to ride at his side, not with Zama. She must have felt his gaze upon her, for her head turned towards him. Even at that distance her eyes were an extraordinary blue. She smiled at him through the thin veil of dust kicked up by the hoofs of the horses. Buckhart stopped halfway up the scree. "Wait for me here, Samoya," he said. "Where are you going, old friend?" Jim asked. "I go to speak to my fathers and take them a gift."
"What gift?"
"Oh, something to eat, and something pretty." Buckhart opened the pouch on his belt and brought out a stick of eland chacha, half the length of his thumb, that he had been hoarding, and the dried wing of a sunbird. The iridescent feathers gleamed like emeralds and rubies. He dismounted and handed Frost's reins to Jim. "I have to ask permission to enter the sacred places," he explained, and disappeared among the proteas and sugar bushes. Zama and Louisa came up, and they unsaddled the horses and settled down to rest. Time passed, and they were drowsing in the shade of the proteas when they heard the sound of a human voice, tiny, with distance, but the echoes whispered along the cliff. Louisa scrambled to her feet and looked up the slope. "I told you Buckhart knew the way," she cried. High above them, he stood at the base of the cliff and waved to them to follow. They saddled up quickly and climbed up to meet him.
"Look! Oh, look!"
Louisa pointed to the vertical gash that split the rock face from the base of the cliff to the crest.
"It's like a gateway, the entrance to our castle."
Buckhart took Frost's reins from Jim and led the horse into the dark opening. They dismounted, and leading their own horses, they followed him. The passage was so narrow that they were forced to walk in single file, with their stirrup irons almost scraping the rock walls on each side. On both sides of them, the glassy, smooth stone seemed to reach to the strip of blue high above them. The sky was so remote that it appeared thin as the blade of a rapier. Zama drove the spare horses into the opening behind them, but their hoofbeats were muffled by the floor of the soft white sand. Their voices echoed weirdly in the confined spaces as the passage twisted and turned through the depths of the rock.
"Oh, look, look!"
Louisa cried with delight, and pointed to the paintings that covered the walls from the sandy floor to her eye level.
"Who painted these? Surely they are not the work of men, but of fairies!"
The paintings depicted men and animals, herds of antelope that galloped wildly across the smooth stone, and dainty little men who pursued them with arrows knocked to their bows ready to shoot. There were herds of giraffe, blotched with ochre and cream, long sinuous necks entwined like serpents. There were rhinoceros, dark and menacing, with nose horns longer than the little human hunters who surrounded them and fired arrows into them so that red blood flowed and dribbled into pools beneath their hoofs. There were elephant, birds, and snakes, all the profusion of creation.
"Who painted these, Bacchat?"
Louisa asked. Bacchat understood the sense of the question, but not the language she spoke. He turned on Frost's back and answered her in a rush of clicking words that sounded like snapping twigs.
"What does he say?"
Louisa turned to Jim.
"They were painted by his tribe, by his fathers and grandfathers. They are the hunting dreams of his people, praise pictures to the courage and beauty of the quarry and the cunning of the hunters." "It's like a cathedral."
Louisa's voice was hushed with awe.
"It is a cathedral," Jim agreed. "It is one of the holy places of the San."
The paintings covered the walls on both sides. Some must have been ancient, for the paint had faded and crumbled, and other artists had painted over them, but the ghostly images of the ages blended together and formed a tapestry of infinity. They were silent at last, for the sound of their voices seemed sacrilegious in this place. At last the rock opened ahead of them, and they rode towards the narrow vertical blade of sunlight at the end of the passage. Then they emerged through the rock cleft, and the sunlight dazzled them. They found themselves high above the world, with a vulture's view across a vastness that left them silent and astonished. Great plains stretched away, dun and limitless, laced with veins of green where the rivers flowed, and dotted with patches of darker forest. Beyond the plains, almost at the reach of the eye, rose an infinity of hills, rank upon rank, like the serrated fangs of a monstrous shark, fading with distance, purple and blue, until they merged with the blue of the tall African sky. Louisa had never imagined a sky so high, or a land so wide, and gazed upon it with a rapt expression, silent until Jim could bear it no longer.
This was his land, and he wanted her to share it with him and love it the way he loved it. Is it not grand?
If I had never believed in God before, I would now, she whispered.